DiscerningHearts.com presents a very special edition of Inside the Pages. I'm your host, Chris McGregor, and I am delighted to be joined by Gregory Erlandson, who is the president and publisher of the Our Sunday Visitor Publishing Division. He is also the president of the Catholic Press Association of the United States and Canada, and was appointed by Pope Benedict XVI as a consultor to the Pontifical Council for Social Communications. His writings have received numerous awards, and he's been published in the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post, the Los Angeles Times, and a variety of Catholic publications. He's the co-author of the 2010 book, Pope Benedict XVI and the Sexual Abuse Crisis, Working for Reform and Renewal. We begin our conversation with Gregory Erlandson, who is in Rome, Italy, covering the conclave of cardinals convened to elect the 265th successor to St. Peter. Greg, buongiorno.
Buongiorno.
Or is it nighttime there? I'm well, but
Buonasera.
Buonasera. Thank you for the Italian lesson, among other things I'm sure you'll be sharing with us. Greg, talk to us about the historic moment you're experiencing right now.
Well, it's really a tremendous experience just to be here. It's an honor. And I was here in 2005. I really thought that would be the only time that I would be here professionally, and that was terrific. But this is a unique moment in the history of the church, and particularly following a resignation, which was so unusual and historic. And so this has a whole different feel, and in some ways seems much more widely covered. Mm-hmm. People know the drill now because they only did it 8 years ago in 2005, and that had a whole different feel from the way it is now. There was the grieving for the death of John Paul II. There was the fact that it had been basically a generation since anyone had gone through this process. So everyone was kind of feeling their way at that time. It's only been 8 years. So this time, I think people's awareness of what transpires is much higher. There's not a death that we're grieving over. So there's been so much more attention focused just on the election. And I think that is really what makes this quite phenomenal. And an example of that is the crowd that was in St. Peter's Square this evening to watch what everyone knew was going to be black smoke. I mean, there was more people there in a rainy, cold, dark evening than there was when the white smoke came for Benedict 8 years ago. And that, to me, suggests this incredibly heightened level of interest that we're seeing among people. And the media coverage is so much more extensive now than it was back then. I mean, so many more people are invested here. So many more people are here. I mean, 5,600, probably close to 6,000 journalists by now who are here. So this really is pretty phenomenal.
Well, Greg, from the perspective of Our Sunday Visitor and its understanding and growth in the new media, what would you say was the influence or the energy that was created by this new evangelization with the new media?
Well, that's interesting, and I think that's one of the great gifts of this pontificate that just ended, was the emphasis on the new evangelization. It was insight that really was first expressed by Pope John Paul, but I think Pope Benedict really drove it forward, and declaring this a year of faith is actually a remarkable convergence of events, because I think what we're seeing here is an incredible evangelizing moment for the church. And you're seeing a great deal of interest, I think, among young people. I was just talking to some young seminarians, and they're completely entranced by all this. And I think this is an opportunity for the church to really get its message out in a way that can use the general secular media as well as benefit from the Catholic media that always gives it the best coverage. So it is very much a moment of new evangelization, and in a way that maybe I hadn't thought about so much, it's kind of a fruit of the new evangelization as well.
Well, Greg, here at home, watching this on cable on the various secular stations, I'm trying to figure out how many rooftops are left in Rome that, you know, that there's a place to stand, because it's everywhere. I mean, if the Catholic
everywhere.
Church is irrelevant in today's society, you wouldn't know it by turning on
yes,
the television.
Exactly. Actually, you make a funny point, because when you walk into St. Peter's Square and then you turn your back to the Basilica and you look out at what's happening, you see these huge, bright lights everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's really phenomenal. And you realize these are all rooftops that have been basically rented at probably exorbitant sums by various networks so that they have proper camera positions. So it's the world's media literally is ringing St. Peter's waiting for the announcement of the new pope.
What do you suppose this moment might have in the United States as far as just the excitement for the faith, but also on the living out of the faith? Because here, the American media in particular are really putting a focus on what's happening there today.
That's true. And ironically, now that I'm over here, I'm not tracking things as closely as what's happening in the United States, and I'd be interested in your opinion on that. I think that the media coverage and the excitement it's generating is for the good. And I would hope that this is a moment in which Catholics kind of are affirmed in their identity, and it can be a catechetical moment, actually. There's so many teaching moments that are associated with what we're going through right now. At the same time, my one caution is that American journalism is increasingly driven by celebrity journalism and through the magical event crisis journalism. So whatever the recent extravagant happening is, then they zero in on it. And so we shouldn't fool ourselves that this is somehow a breakthrough moment for American journalism or the church's role in society. I think actually that's a long, hard slog that we're going through right now, and we're probably just in the middle of it. But all that said, and that is a somewhat pessimistic view, I think that we are duty-bound to seize this moment and try to reach people, try to teach people about what the church is about and what is represented by this election and how we go about choosing our leaders, and what we think are the priority issues facing our church and facing society. And I think we're going to evangelize some people and call their attention to it. I had a kind of secular, non-Catholic television producer tell me how she was so entranced by all this that she was really wondering if maybe she should become Catholic. And I thought, wow, that's just a terrific thing. And hopefully that's happening more than once, and hopefully that's happening in the United States as well as in Rome.
Yeah, there's something that seems to be pulling on the hearts of people here. Can I call it hope? And even though some people, their hope might be in a direction that it may lead them down another path, I mean, but something's being churned up within
yes.
the human heart when they're watching this, even if they're not Catholic.
Right. Well, and I think what's important, you know, is that our hearts are restless till they rest in thee, and our hope is in Christ. And our hope is not in the Pope, to be honest. Our hope is not in, certainly not in a celebrity personality. The Pope is the Vicar of Christ on earth, and we have tremendous respect for him, but we know there's been good popes and bad popes, strong popes and weak popes. Our faith isn't built on that. And in fact, I was talking to this producer that I was telling you about, and I was trying to make that point because otherwise it gets dangerous. You get too bound up. You like John Paul II, therefore you're a more active Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
You're kind of cool on Pope Benedict, then you're a less active Catholic. But that's not what should be driving us. And that would be my only caution to that. But that said, people are so hungry right now. and they're being fed rocks when they want bread. And this is, you know, what the church, the message of the church constantly is. And in our society in which we are eating the inedible, we need bread, and the church offers it. So, so I'm a little pessimistic about sometimes how things play in our culture, but I'm very optimistic that this is an opportunity we need to seize regardless.
You know, the one thing I've always been struck when I've had the opportunity to go to Rome, especially for events which seem to pull in the rest of the world, that for those in America, of course, we're very ethnocentric. I mean, we're very myopic. It's thinking, you know, everyone is thinking as we are. But when you're in Rome and you're in the particular situation, I've always been struck how little the American influence is actually felt.
Yes.
What are you experiencing in this particular moment? Because over here, a lot of people are thinking this is an American moment.
You know, I think your experience is correct. I think that generally when you come here, you realize all these things that get Americans hot and bothered generally don't have a huge impact here. And especially when you get that kind of interest group politics that can sometimes get the American church caught up. Mm-hmm. But this is an American moment. And the reason I say that is because first, we have a terrific group of cardinals. I mean, really, really sharp, very, very, high quality in terms of their thinking, in terms of their knowledge of the church. Many of them have worked over here in Rome, and they're having an impact. And I think from what I understand in their interventions in the general congregations that preceded the conclave, mm-hmm. they were quite vocal. Second, and for the first time, certainly that I know of, even though these are all supposed to be somewhat secret, is there's clearly a couple American cardinals that are being considered as papabile. And mm-hmm. it's not just a fantasy of some, you know, of the Boston newspaper, or the New York newspaper. They really are, and they're getting coverage per se. So one of the leading Italian Vaticanista, which is the journalist reporting on the Vatican, is Andrea Tornielli mm-hmm. for La Stampa, and he talked about, you know, what is for sure is at this time America's influence is being felt, and even though the prediction always is that no American will be pope because we're the superpower and they're not ready to have the superpower also have the papacy, I'm not sure that that's necessarily true. I think that if that's the unthinkable, I think people are now thinking it. I'm not making a prediction here. I'm just saying that whatever happens, I think America's status, America's contribution to the church, maybe that's a better way to put it, mm-hmm. is definitely being recognized, and that's great.
You know, it's interesting that you mentioned the influence in the congregational meetings before the official conclave as they go in and prayerfully discern who will be the pope. If you go back to 2005, and I'm sure from your experience when you covered it back then, Greg, that the voice that was heard during those pre-sessions, essentially, was that of Joseph Ratzinger. I mean, mm-hmm. he did a lot of talk. There was a lot of influence, not necessarily that he was overtly that way. It's just that it turned out that way. Would you say that there seems to be something going on with the Americans then, that the fact that if you're listened to in those pre-meetings, chances are the listening will continue?
Yes. The short answer is yes. I think that and I'm sure that there are other cardinals. I mean, we still are, you know, and I'm still operating in a primarily American-centric universe here, though I've been trying to talk with folks who are outside of that. But I think that people recognize there's a certain vitality in the American church. And, you know, realistically, we've dealt with some of the brutal problems that may just be starting to be faced in other parts of the world. Mm-hmm. And I mean that from everything from sex abuse to just the battle with individualism and materialism. You know, we complain about our levels of mass attendance, and we complain about sometimes the state of our parishes, but we really do have a pretty vital network, and we do have a tradition of volunteerism that is really the envy of a lot of countries in the world, and certainly the envy of European countries. So I think people are acknowledging that, that recognition. And the other thing is that we do have more and more people who have been involved in sort of international church affairs. So I think that's important. If you look at Cardinal O'Malley, he has experience overseas. He has a lot of connections with Latin America. If you look at Cardinal Dolan, he was the rector of the North American College in Rome and spent several years here. Cardinal Wuerl spent time in Rome. Cardinal George spent time in Rome. Cardinal DiNardo worked for the Congregation for Bishops. So you have a lot of that kind of experience, which for a long time we lacked. And we certainly have, you know, the sort of the fulcrum of all this experience is right there at the top with these cardinals. So it's a variety of things, and I think this is it's a good American moment. I will say, now that I've given you that whole discussion, is that we still have to remember we're a universal church. And absolutely the thing that can't happen is that we go about trying to remake the church in America's image. One of the great things about the church is its appreciation of its universality and the diversity of its peoples, and how the faith is expressed, in one sense shared, particularly built around our liturgy, but on the other hand, it is also very diverse, and the church in Africa is not to be made to look like the church in America. Church in Latin America is not to be made to look like the church in Europe. So I don't want to argue too strenuously about the extent of that American moment. But I think we can all take pride in the fact and joy in the fact that the gifts of the American church, I think, are being appreciated in perhaps a way they haven't been before.
You really hit it when you said that they can bring to the table, over to Europe, over into this gathering of the world, the experience that we did have 10, 12, 13 years ago, in which we passed through that fire of the sex abuse scandal, and we're still learning that and learning how to use and work with the media. That's something I noticed when I was there in 2011 for the blogger meeting, that it seemed as though the rest of the world was just beginning to hit that fire. And there was a great deal of anger, a great deal of suspicion, a lot of what we experienced that decade prior. And so you can kind of see that, can't you, with how even Cardinal Dolan, but also DiNardo and many of the others, O'Malley, how they're embracing this moment and being so very transparent.
Yeah, I think that's true. And someone, I think it was John Allen, wrote that he even felt it kind of funny arguing that the U.S. bishops were the models of accountability and transparency. And the reason he was saying that, of course, is that we've been through this whole kind of miserable period with sex abuse. But in truth, we are much more oriented that way. And our government and our society is more oriented that way. We Americans, it isn't that we're always transparent and accountable. It's just that we acknowledge that it should be that way when we get so angry about it. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you get the sort of, the Italian shrug or the Gallic shrug, they're not really expecting that it's going to be different. It's more of a fatalistic approach. And I think Americans are idealistic and we're quick to bemoan when things don't happen. And that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a sign of that.
I think that the really fascinating reflection is going to be on what this moment does to the church in America. I mean, we were just talking about what Americans bring there. What's going to come home? Because usually when there's something like this that occurs in the life of the church, it does have a ripple. But this one could potentially be a much bigger wave.
I think that we haven't gotten to the last chapter yet. We don't know who the new pope will be. I think depending on who the new pope is, and I'm not saying that it has to be American, but I think that will kind of influence the size and shape of the wave, to use your metaphor. And so we'll have to see, you know, who it is and what, how that person is understood, and of course how they reach out, how they use media. how they, their spiritual depth, how they exemplify and model Christ, all those different things. And frankly, I'm sure some of those kind of administrative skills that we don't really spend a lot of attention on. I think all that will be a factor in how big this is. But I think we have the attention of the Catholic people, and that's a good thing. And we'll have to see how it plays out.
Well, Greg, you're living in a particular moment. It's almost like, how can I put this? It's almost a Holy Saturday type of moment where we're waiting and we're anticipating,
right.
But there's an enthusiasm
yes.
That's different from the character of our true Holy Saturday. But
yes.
What would you say to folks right now, back home? What would be the final thoughts on this particular conversation?
I think my final thoughts is don't stop praying. I went to the titular mass of Cardinal Angelo Scola, who is one of the cardinals that is being mentioned as a possible papabile.
Mm-hmm.
And during that mass, or at the end of that mass, he said that electing the Pope is responsibility of all Christians. And he said that by saying that, what he meant was that we are all responsible to be praying to the Holy Spirit, to ask for the Holy Spirit's guidance at this time. And I talked to one of the cardinals who said that the cardinals were very aware of the prayers that people were offering up for them, and very aware of even the program like Adopt a Cardinal and what all that meant. So my message is keep praying and always keep the focus on Christ, because first and foremost, it's about Christ.
Oh,
and
beautiful, yeah.
The rest will take care of itself.
Well, Greg, I'm wanting to release you now so you can go get some food. I bet it's been a very long day.
I appreciate it. But it's been a joy talking with you, Chris, and I hope something I said was of value. So
always is. And I'm hoping that we'll hear from you again after we see some white smoke.
That would be great. I'd welcome it.
All right. Great. Great. Greg Arrelson, you're the best, and be safe.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chris. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. With Gregory Arrelson, we've been discussing the conclave to elect the 265th successor to St. Peter in Rome, Italy. To learn more about this, be sure to go to osv.com, the website for Our Sunday Visitor. To hear and or to download this discussion along with many others, go to discerninghearts.com. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. Join us next time for Inside the Pages, insights from today's most compelling authors.